Hello, this is the voiceover for the slides, which have the title, How to Put a Polynomial Through Points. And I'm sitting here in a hotel in northern Italy, and I think probably the slides work pretty well by themselves without a voiceover, but I'm going to try it anyway. I hope the sound quality is okay. I'm using a little headset and so on, but not a great audio system. So, I'm assuming you're looking like I am at the 29 slides, and I'll tell you about which slide I'm on. Let me go from 1 to 2 now, which is to just explain. On 2 is titled Purpose, and the purpose here of this assignment 3 and these slides is to talk about how to put a polynomial through points, which is very different from how good. And one of the things we're going to talk about is something called the Lagrange remainder theorem, which is theorem 3.3 in the 9th edition. And we'll talk about that theorem and use it. That'll be on assignment 4 or 5, I forget which. But not to worry about that how good question for now. We're just going to worry about how to. Okay, so on to slide 3. And so we want to consider a problem where we have 4 points, and the coordinates of these points are given, minus 1, 2, 0, 3, 3, 4, and 5, 0. And these are 4 points in the plane. They have different x-coordinates, and in this case, different y-coordinates. It turns out the y-coordinates being different is not important, but it is important. The x-coordinates are different, but they're not equally spaced. And the next slide will show a picture. They're not equally spaced x-coordinates, and they don't need to be. Sometimes you have that situation. And the question is how to put a polynomial through those points. And for instance, there's no straight line through those points, which you can easily check. So there's no polynomial of degree 1. It turns out there's no polynomial of degree 2, no quadratic polynomial either. But there is a polynomial of degree 3, and in fact there's exactly one polynomial of degree 3. And we're even going to show why that is some slides later. Now I'm on slide 4. It says a picture of the problem. That's the title. And there are the 4 points, and we're going to think of them as the values of a function, but we don't see the function, and I think that's very realistic. Frequently you use a computer to sample something, get a few numbers, and try to do something with the approximation you have. So you may have a pretty well-defined function, but only know its value at 1,000 points, and then you want to do something with it, or in this case, 4 points. Slide 5, which is how to find p of x. So let's suppose p of x is the degree 3 polynomial through the points. I'm about to sort of justify why it's a degree 3. We write that down as in standard form with 4 coefficients. In fact, there are exactly 4 coefficients at 4 points. So we have 4 unknowns and 4 facts. That is to say, the 4 facts about this polynomial p of x are that it goes through our 4 points. So, in fact, here are 4 equations with the unknown, 4 linear equations. The unknowns are the coefficients. And those appear on the left side of the equations on slide 5. And on the right appear the y values. So each one of those equations says that that polynomial, which currently has unknown coefficients, goes through a point. So I emphasize, if I give you n points, you should be able to write down a generic polynomial with n coefficients. That actually means it's degree n minus 1, which I'll say several times here, I think. And you should be able to write down n equations for this degree n polynomial, each equation saying that the polynomial goes through one of the points. Yes, you can solve those equations by hand. Tedious, and the whole point here is to get an automatable algorithm. So let's think of that as a matrix system. I'll call the matrix big A, and it has the essentially the x values to different powers, and then the unknown is this vector v, and then the known is the vector b. The known vector b has the y coordinates. So the matrix A has the x coordinates, the matrix b has the y coordinates. And the unknowns are this vector, sorry, B is a vector. I think I said it was matrix just now. The unknown is the vector V, and it has the 4 unknown coefficients. Notice that I'm not, excuse me, I'm not simplifying the matrix, the numbers in the matrix, because a machine can do that, of course. And actually, the pattern is pretty clear. It's a pretty simple pattern. Each row has a different x value in it, and then it has powers of that x value. So make sure you can convert. You can convert from a fit a polynomial through given points question into this matrix form. So we have a tool for solving such matrix problems, and indeed the tool for entering and storing and looking at and manipulating and modifying matrices and vectors. And that's MATLAB and Octave. This is the original design of the matrix laboratory, which is MATLAB. So let's use it that way. I enter A by entering the rows with spaces separating the entries and semicolons separating the rows. So it's got four rows and four columns, and I end up entering 16 numbers. Again, I'm not simplifying them, though. And of course, as soon as I enter and hit return, it shows me a simplified form of those numbers. Similarly, I enter B. In this case, this is a column vector, so its rows are each of length 1, and it immediately shows it to me. And then I can solve this system. That is to say, the solution of A times V equals B is A backslash B. And in another slide or two, I'm going to explain why that makes sense, that backslash makes sense. But in any case, that V gives me numbers, and the point is those numbers are the unknown coefficients. The A1 is the number 3, A2 is the number, A0 is the number 3, A1 is the number 0.98333, and so on. So I immediately know the coefficients of the polynomial, so I can write down the polynomial. I know which polynomial this is. Before we actually look at whether we got a good answer, comments on matrices and vectors here. First, how to enter a matrix generally. I sort of explained that already. Secondly, how to enter a column vector quickly. You can enter a row of numbers just with the square bracket and then the numbers separated by zeros. And this apostrophe allows you to switch rows and columns to what's called the transpose operation. So this is a quick way to enter a column vector without entering a lot of semicolons. And about this backslash, to solve the system A times V equals B, well, for V, well, you divide by A. What that means, if you've taken linear algebra course, which not everybody has here, but I'm hoping you've seen a matrix and a vector, and we'll see more of them, it means you invert the matrix and multiply both sides by that. So that A inverse times A is the identity matrix, in other words, something that the matrix that does nothing. And you multiply A inverse on both sides, and it simplifies to V as A inverse B. So that means you're dividing by A, since you're multiplying by the inverse, but it's on the left, which is why it's this backslash character. Remember, if we had an equation like 3x equals 5, the solution would be 5/3, and that is the same as, you can get that by multiplying by 1/3 on both sides. So remember that division is just multiplication by inverses. Believe it or not, that's what I was saying. Division is multiplication by inverses, and that's true even for regular numbers. Forward slash actually means something in MATLAB, but it doesn't make sense for the sizes of the matrices we have. So if you try B slash back forward slash A, it won't make sense. So the polynomial we have had better go through the points, and we can check that by formulas by plugging in the x values and seeing if we get the y values. And sure enough, we do. But this is a case where a picture is worth a few hundred characters. If we actually plot the points and plot the polynomial, we see that this looks like a degree 3 polynomial, and sure enough, it goes through our 4 points. So I'm now on slide 9, and that's the slide that said, did we solve the problem? Okay. So at this point, we have how to. It seems to me, especially if you have a copy of MATLAB or Octave in front of you, you should know how to put a polynomial through points. And except that I'm in Italy and you're probably in Alaska, I would at this point ask if there are any questions. So maybe you can email me your questions. Okay, on to slide 10. We're about a third of the way done. Not so bad, 9 minutes. I want to think about the general case now. We had 4 points before. Now let's have n points. A polynomial of degree n minus 1 has n unknown coefficients. So it's if you have n points, it's a polynomial of degree n minus 1 that has the right number of coefficients to be the unknowns in a linear system. In fact, that's exactly what the slide, slide 10, which is titled The General Case, says. It says that here are the equations you can write down for a degree n minus 1 polynomial, which goes through n given points. And it is important, and we will see this in a moment, why it's important that the x-coordinates be distinct. Well, actually, one reason it's important is that if you had two points with the same x-coordinate, they would be above each other, and a polynomial is a function. So if a polynomial satisfies the vertical line test, that is to say a polynomial only goes through one y-value for each x-value, and so the x-values have to be distinct for it to even make sense that we want a function through the points, much less a polynomial. On to slide 11, which is titled The Pattern in the Matrix, or the general case. The matrix that comes from doing this is an n by n matrix, n rows and n columns, and each row is very predictable. The way we've ordered the unknowns, which start with the constant term in the polynomial, each row starts with a 1 and then has the powers of the x-coordinates in turn. Okay. So these are powers of the x-coordinates listed in a matrix. B, then, is very simple. It's simply a list of the y-coordinates. So the x-coordinates produce the matrix. The y-coordinates produce the right-hand side of a system of equations, A, V equals B. V is the unknown coefficients, which I've called A0, A1, and so on through AN minus 1. Turns out this matrix has been is in some sense the one of the oldest matrices that historically people started using matrices in the way we do now, only about 1850, but more or less they were using matrices because they were talking about determinants, and Vandermonde was this person about the time of the American Revolution, I suppose, maybe a little before, who was thinking about this problem, putting a polynomial through points. And Gauss also thought about this problem around this time. Newton, I think, may have even thought about this problem. And so they asked the question, can you solve a system? And they thought about it in determinants. Anyway, long ago there was a Vandermonde determinant, and slightly less long ago people started thinking of it as a matrix, probably only about 150 years ago. But Vandermonde has his name on this matrix. Vandermonde matrix is built in. That's why there is a command in MATLAB in Octave that's called Vander, V-A-N-D-E-R, and it builds this matrix for you. The point being that you can build the matrix as soon as you know the x-coordinates of the point. So this is a simple program to write. It would be a not very interesting exercise, I hope, for everybody to write it. And Vander takes a list of x-coordinates and produces a matrix. So we try it on this slide 12, which is some MATLAB, and we discover that it works almost exactly like we want. The rows are in the wrong order, and just for emphasis, to build this matrix, this A, you only enter the x-coordinates, not the y-coordinates. They don't have anything to do with the matrix in our problem. To fix the row ordering, column ordering issue, the columns are in the wrong order. The rows are fine. The columns are in the wrong order. To fix the column order, we use flip left right. That is to say, there's FLIPLR is a command in MATLAB, and you should not be surprised that FLIPUD for up down is a command in matrix in MATLAB in Octave. So these are two of many sort of matrix manipulation commands, things that swap rows and columns. That's just the apostrophe. Things that extract the diagonal, that's D-I-A-G. Things that, what else? Take a big matrix and spread it out into a long vector. That's called reshape, flatten, or something like this. Anyway, there are lots of commands like that. Flip left right reverses the order, so now we know how to, with just a few characters, build our matrix without thinking. That means that a complete program to form the coefficients of our polynomial. This is on slide 13. A complete program to form those coefficients is only three lines. Using flip left right, Vander, and entering the x-coordinates to build A and the Y coordinates to build B, and backslash to solve the system. So this is definitely an example of the efficiency of MATLAB and Octave once you know what you're doing. When you actually think about the entries of V, there V is a vector, a column vector, and so its entries would naturally be ordered, indexed 1 through N, and so I've written out what the polynomial is in terms of those numbers. And here's some advice also on this slide 13 about plotting the result. That is to say, you plot the points with markers, these little circles as markers. And then in addition, you enter a whole long list of maybe thousands of x-coordinates, so you get a nice smooth plot of the polynomial. So this is the plot the points with markers of size 12. This is what on slide 13 the code says. Plot the markers, build a long list of x values, build the corresponding y values of the polynomial. This is now a smooth plot of the polynomial. Hold the figure so that it isn't deleted by the new plot. Plot the polynomial on top of it, in this case in red, and hold off. And when you do that, you'll see the, if you do what's on slide 13, you will see exactly the picture that's on slide 9. If you go back to slide 9. Okay, that's a complete how-to, and even how to look at this problem for an arbitrary number of points. As long as the x-coordinates are distinct and we have n points, you can do that. We want to think about whether that's a good problem down the line. And the most important fact, like I said, we'll put off for a little later, which is theorem 3.3. Here's a comment about how quick it is. You build a n by n matrix and solve that system. And it turns out that takes a fair amount of arithmetic. And if you use 100 points, for instance, in a 100-degree polynomial, there are, in fact, several issues with doing that. But one of them is just the cost of the arithmetic. Do that, you'll be doing about a million arithmetic operations, because 100 cubed is about a million. So that does take some time, and that turns out to be an issue, and one reason why Vandermonde is not always used. Anyway, I will cover it. It's an important section of this course is solving linear systems. Important but brief thing will be how to quickly evaluate a polynomial once you know its coefficients. That's called Herner's method. And also, I will get to Neville's method down the line, which does not build the coefficients. It turns out one of the things we've actually done wrong here for many purposes is to go after the coefficients just because we feel more comfortable and it's sort of have warm, fuzzy feelings by knowing the coefficients. It turns out what you really tend to want is what is the value of the polynomial in between the points that are given. So it turns out the coefficients don't matter. Okay, now we're on slide 15. I'm going to pause for a moment, and before introducing a new idea, we're halfway. Okay, so onward for the second half of the voiceover here. I'm on slide 15, which is titled A New Idea, Newton's Form. It turns out this is actually historically even older, because, well, Newton was most of 100 years before Vandermonde. And the idea is to not be so silly as to use the standard form of polynomial, because it turns out there are many ways you can write a polynomial, and it helps, and this is what's on this slide 15, to write this polynomial as coefficients times first a constant term, then a linear term, then a quadratic term, and so on, but where each of these successive terms is written in terms of the difference between the unknown x and the x-coordinates of the points. I guess the question about the slide is, looking ahead, do you see why this helps? And the hint is that when you plug in one of your points, you get lots of zeros. And in fact, on slide 16, we see the same four points and the unknown polynomial of degree 3. So it's got four coefficients. Remember this off by one issue. N points means n minus one degree. So it's got four coefficients. And those coefficients, and it looks a little messy, but the terms, not the coefficients, the terms, go away if you plug in the x coordinate. So in particular, if you plug into this polynomial x equals minus 1, then all of the terms but the first one go away. Now, the result has to be 2, which is y1, which means you immediately know c0. Okay? And if you plug in x2, which is the value 0, all the terms except the first two go away, and the result must be the value 3. But so now you have the second equation has two unknowns in it, but you already know one of them from the first equation, and so on. In other words, you get what's called a triangular matrix problem, which I now write in terms of M and W. The B is the same as in the Vandermonde approach, but the M and W are different. The M is a triangular matrix we build from the x-coordinates, and the W is the unknown coefficients. But remember, the coefficients mean something different. They're coefficients of these new kinds of linear and quadratic and cubic terms. They're not coefficients of the monomials 1x, x squared, x cubed, and like that, which were used in Vandermonde. So again, we have a matrix problem. This time, though, it's pretty darn easy to solve by hand. For instance, I can tell that C0 is 2, and since C0 is 2 and you have the second equation is 2 plus C1 is 3, I know C1 is 1, and so on. It's actually pretty easy to, by hand, find C1, C2, C3. And yes, you can do this by hand, and I claim without too much work, you can write down the polynomial. This is nice. However, you have to do a lot of literature. You have to do a lot of manipulation, a lot of simplification, to turn it into a polynomial in standard form. But make sure you can yourself take n points with x-coordinates and y-coordinates and set up the Newton form of the polynomial with unknown coefficients, then the matrix problem or the linear system, both either one, and then solve that yourself. Make sure you can all do all of those steps. We now have a concrete polynomial, a completely boring, tedious calculation, which actually requires a lot of computation, relatively speaking, produces the coefficients in the standard form, and amazingly enough, they're the same coefficients. Now, the fundamental reason is that there is only one polynomial of degree 3, which goes through 4 points. So once you put it in the same form, it turns out to be the same polynomial. And we're actually about to prove that. But for a moment, let's think about that as a program. The pattern in the matrix is a little bit more, well, a little bit harder to record, I guess. But it comes out to be a triangular matrix. I suppose that should say the first line of that slide 19. Now I'm slide 19. It should say the advantage of the Newton form is that the triangular matrix M, because on the previous slide I called it M, is created, which is easier to solve by hand, because it's triangular only n squared operations instead of n cubed. This is a significant saving are needed to solve the system. Polynomial comes out in non-standard forms, but it's just as easy to evaluate it at a point. Anyway, here's a brief program whose interesting part is just to form the matrix. That is to say, it's got a loop, and it forms the matrix by columns, starting with a big zero matrix and filling in the columns from the left side. And then, so it builds M, the matrix, B, the right-hand side. The right-hand side is again, the Y values. Then it solves the equations which are MW equals B. It solves them using the backslash, and then you get the polynomial. It turns out just writing down this form tells you that there's one answer. What I mean by that is, if you set up this system of equations, think about it as a matrix, you've got a triangular matrix. Here's a example W for n points. You get this triangular matrix, lower triangular. W is lower. Wow, I really have trouble, because this is the matrix M. On the previous slide, it was A. Anyway, it's supposed to be M. Newton form matrix M. I must have been tired. Anyway, W and M are the same matrix. Anyway, the diagonal, the entries above the diagonal are all 0. There's a somewhat complicated pattern, but the determinant of a matrix which is triangular like this is just the product of the diagonal entries. And when you multiply all those diagonal entries together, you get the expression there that says determinant of W, it should say determinant of M, is the product, that's the big pi symbol, of all the differences of the coordinates of the points, ordered so that you're always looking at differences of a later point minus an earlier point. as long as those x values are different numbers, then it's a product of a whole bunch of numbers, none of which are zero. And it turns out when you multiply together a bunch of numbers, none of which are zero, you get a result that's not zero. So the determinant is not zero, which means that there's only one solution to the system. So this is actually a proof on this slide 20 that that the polynomial, there's only one polynomial because there's only one solution to the system. As the footnote says, however, there's no exercises on it in the short term. Turns out there's another idea, another how-to idea. I'm now on slide 21. There's another idea about how to solve this problem of finding the polynomial, and it requires solving no equations at all. It's kind of a neat idea, so let me try to explain that. It's called Lagrange's polynomials, and Lagrange is maybe 1800. I've written here. I was thinking it was a little later, but Lagrange polynomials. So you take your again, 4 points, and you look at the x-coordinates. This time, you just build polynomials based on the x-coordinates. And the formula is supposed to be clear if you look at the pattern. The pattern is that for these 4 points, you build four polynomials. Each of these polynomials is degree 3. It's cubic. And it's built as a quotient. So L1 is the first of these, and it's built as a quotient. And in the numerator, you have x minus each one of the x-coordinates of the points, except x1. And in the denominator, you have the same pattern, where instead of the unknown x, you have x1. Anyway, I've done it concretely, and by example is by far the best way to do this. So I encourage you to do the first problem in the homework, which is a three-point question, and build these polynomials and be clear on the pattern. Also read the book, which is perfectly clear on it as well. Just these are ugly formulas when you typeset them. Anyway, we build four polynomials in this case. They're all cubic. There's a pattern as described on this slide 21. And in the denominators, it's important to note you never write an expression which is zero. The pattern makes sure that you're never dividing by zero as long as the x-coordinates of the original points are distinct. Now, where the heck would you get these polynomials? And the answer is on this next slide, 22, which shows that each one of these four polynomials has a very nice property. It's a degree 3, each one of these four polynomials is a degree 3 polynomial that does something special at its point. So L1 does something special at x1, L2 does something special at x2, and so on. What it does special is it goes through the value 1, whereas it goes through the value 0 at all the other x-coordinates. So the pattern, in summary, is the polynomial L sub I has value 0 at all of the x values of the points, except that it's 1 at xi. It turns out there's only one such polynomial that does that. This is very nice to build the answer to our question of a polynomial through a arbitrary 4 points or n points. In any case, make sure that you can find these Lagrange polynomials if I give you the x values, because this is just a formula. In symbols, L sub I of parentheses x sub j is 1 if the I and j are equal, and 0 otherwise. That's a useful expression. If you know delta ij, if you've ever heard of that thing, you can write it in a simpler form. But this is the one I want to communicate. L sub I of x sub j has a pattern. How does this help build p of x? Remember that what we want is a polynomial not that hits zeros and ones. We want a polynomial that hits our y values. We've given 4 points, for instance, which have x values and y values, and we want this polynomial to go through these 4 points in the plane. But the idea is that these y values, we can get these y values by multiplying the l's by the y's, because the l's are hitting 1 at one of these points and 0 otherwise. When you multiply them by a y value, you get a polynomial that hits y and 0 otherwise, and you add together all of these things, because adding 0 to other numbers gives you the other number, etc. Anyway, the answer is at the bottom of slide 23. If you've got the L's, these Lagrange polynomials, built already, then the polynomial you want through your 4 points is very elegant. It's just that formula right there. Okay. Why is this the answer? It's because when you plug in, I'm now on slide 24, when you plug in x sub 1 into this expression on the top of slide 24, all the terms go away except the first one, L1 of x1 is 1, but then it's multiplied by y1, so you get y1, and similarly. So make sure you understand this slide 24 explaining why the polynomial now hits the points you wanted. Notice how you build polynomials, the L's, you build those from the X values, and only at the last, sort of last moment, do you use the Y values to get the polynomial you want. So now on slide 25, we're approaching the end here. On the last slide, we saw that the polynomial hits the values we want because the polynomials L sub I pick out the point xi in general expression. Anyway, we have a nice brief summation notation for that polynomial, and in terms of that summation notation at the bottom of slide 25, you can see an expression for why p of xj is yj. If you go through our example again, you've already got these L's, L1 through L4. Here's a simplified form of them. Now this is really, really tedious, and one of the points is that it's hard to automate, or when you automate it, it's a lot of work. So it turns out this Lagrange idea is beautiful and not widely used, but it's a it illuminates this problem very well, even though it turns out we've already seen, and this is not it, the best algorithm so far. Anyway, L's can be simplified. Then you combine them, multiply them by the Y's, and you get the polynomial. You get it in this big messy form, and a tedious calculation simplifies it to a form which is given at the bottom of slide 26, and it's exactly the same polynomial we got before, because there is only one polynomial of degree 3 that goes through our points. So it must be the same. We knew in advance it's the same, but this illustrates that we could have gotten it a different way without solving the linear system of equations. That's what's special about Lagrange. Excuse me. Is this Lagrange scheme a good idea? As shown on slide 27, it allows you to write down the answer to the polynomial interpolation question. First, a product formula for the polynomials L, and then a sum formula for the polynomial you want. This is sort of very elegant and not terribly useful because it requires so much work, actually, to use it for anything else. So, for example, if we simply want the coefficients in the standard form, this is a terribly inefficient way to get them because we have to do all the simplifying at the end in order to know the coefficients in the standard form. So it turns out if you either want the coefficients of the polynomial in standard form, it's inefficient. Or if you want the value of the polynomial at locations in between the xi's, it's actually not very very efficient for that either. There's going to be an alternative for both of the questions stated on slide 28. Both of those questions have a quicker algorithm, and we'll get to both of them. Moral, at the bottom of slide 28, sometimes a formula for the answer is less useful than an algorithm that just gives you the numbers quickly that you want, and the typical number that you want from polynomial interpolation is, well, what is the value of the polynomial in between the points you started with? In other words, let's do interpolation, and doing it seriously, you want a number. You give it some points, for instance, you might give it some points, 4 points, and then you want the value of the polynomial in between your 4 points somewhere. Or maybe if you're optimistic outside of the range of the points, that's called extrapolation. Anyway, we're actually interested in interpolation typically, or extrapolation sometimes, and that's not something that the Lagrange form gives us. Conclusion, how to do polynomial interpolation. Last slide, slide 29. You should be able to do by hand and then turn into MATLAB and Octave, at least for options 1 and 2 here. The Van der Waal matrix method and the Newton matrix method has a non-standard polynomial form and a triangular matrix, that one. And you should be able to do by hand the Lagrange direct formula. The first two require solving linear systems, which sounds terrifying somehow, except that MATLAB makes solving linear systems very easy. The last one does not, which sounds wonderful, but then it turns out to require us to do a whole bunch of algebra by hand or with Mathematica or something, and even if you use Mathematica, it turns out to be rather expensive in terms of how much computation your computer has to do. So it turns out Lagrange's is a pretty way to think about it, but not a good way to. The advantage of Newton over Van der Waal in this linear system is triangular, which means it's easier and faster to solve. It turns out it's also more stable to solve. If you start making small errors, which your machine will do because it only has 64-bit precision, then the Newton method will actually not start generating bigger errors from the small errors you have to make when you do arithmetic on a computer. Later in the course, we'll get to one more algorithm, which I've already promised. Nevel's algorithm doesn't ever even try to look at the polynomial. It just tries to build the interpolation value directly, which is kind of sweet, that is to say. It's a fast algorithm for getting what we tend to want instead of a slower algorithm for getting the coefficients or the form of the polynomial. That's another lecture. Another lecture is also, as I said at the very beginning, is to know how good Nevel's algorithm, as well as the three methods in these slides, are about how to, but we also care about how good, and how close is the polynomial to the function we were approximating. That's something I will get back to. Okay, so you should see assignment number 3, and I'm confident that you can do all of the problems on assignment number 3 if you have some general notion of what I've been talking about on these slides. And you can always go back to the slides and try to reproduce the concrete computations. That's a great thing to do if you're a little confused. I'm going to stop now, and hopefully you've survived all this. And you can always go back and read the slides or listen to this again if you really want to. Bye-bye.